everyone, and welcome to Method Happenings, a show for and about the city of Method, and I am John Petrella. And the purpose of this program is to give Method citizens facts and information to help you make informed choices and to discover city services or businesses you may not have been aware of. And our guests today are Russ Kaya and Gus Kayafis from the Palm Press Studio, which is located in Method Square. I hope I got the names right, guys. I'm terrible with names. So anyhow, welcome to the show, and we're really happy to have you guys
Thank
on.
You for having us,
It's
John.
Our pleasure.
Glad to be here.
All right, we're going to jump right in, and we'll begin by asking you both, give us a little about your background. Who is Gus? Who is Ross?
Sure, happy to do that. My name is Gus Kayafis. I started Palm Press back in 1976. I was the head of the photography department at Mass College of Art, and I got excited about photography and clear description, and I'd gone to MIT as an undergrad, so I designed and manufactured some special cameras that a lot of photographers used. I went to graduate school at RISD in Providence, and I started a program that is terrific. I left it in 1980 to incorporate Palm Press, which was a photographic atelier, a workshop. And we've continued uninterrupted since then, and I've hired almost every employee I ever had out of an internship program or out of Mass College of Art, like Ross. And I sort of look at it as continuing my education and the education of the students. And we started off in the basement of my house in Concord, and then we moved to Waltham, and then we moved to Littleton, and then
wow.
Pepperell.
You've been around.
Yeah, yeah. And each time we moved, we built a darkroom.
Okay.
You know, so we carried wow. along a 14-foot tall, one-ton enlarger that used by National Geographic. And we've had as many as 15 employees, and now we have three.
Okay.
And we've only been open to the public because we got seduced by the public of Medford.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it really is
yes,
a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, we were in warehouses, and we discovered, as we were talking briefly earlier, that, you know, Paul Revere rode up on his horse to welcome us. We weren't expecting it. Now we look forward to it. And it it took us a year to build it out because we had we moved in the very beginning of COVID.
Okay, yeah.
And so we just stored equipment and stacks of it everywhere. And finally, when we couldn't find a plumber, had a couple cancel on us, I have this friend, this Chinese guy that owns four restaurants, and he said, "I have a really good, but you're going to have to talk with me." So I'm on the phone. The Chinese guy is, I hand him the phone. My Chinese friend explains to him from English to Chinese what to do. And we ended up with, you know, with a working darkroom. We love it. And the iteration that we're sort of in the middle of, for me, it was to wind down until I realized Ross's dream was to have this kind of a business working with artists. So he basically, the last year and a half, 2 years, has been pointing the direction we go to. And I have to say that it's really good.
That's good to hear. Ross, yourself?
Yeah, so as Gus mentioned, I went to Mass Art long after he was there. I fell in love with silver printing in the darkroom and became passionate about photographic production. I worked at a frame shop in Brookline for a while after I graduated, started very part-time with Gus and slowly picked up printing jobs. And as he mentioned, we sort of, you know, got to this point where we recognized that I wanted to continue it or you know, transform it in a way. And the goal for me is to sort of make it a full service production studio where we can do every part of the process from the negative or the digital file to the print to mounting it to framing it. And then, yeah, as Gus mentioned, about a year ago, we built a new and used photo book store in the front of our studio, which has brought many, many people, many Medfordians in. And okay. And it's been wonderful.
It's interesting because not only do they come in to look at books and hopefully buy books, but when they see we do framing or develop film or we end up, the bottom line gets affected in an amazingly pop, you know, that's great good. Way.
So they come in for one thing, and then they find out, oh, wait a minute, you do this, yeah. this, the framing.
Yeah, and so, people will come in
yeah, that's great.
And spend 3 hours. They'll say hello, and sometimes they don't even. They sit down. MIT Museum donated us a really big table when they moved to their new facility and benches.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, 2-3 hours later, they say thank you and goodbye. And sometimes they buy a book, and sometimes they buy 10 books. But we're making, you know, friends in the community.
That's great, yeah.
One of the things that Ross didn't mention, and I knew he wouldn't, he's a great bluegrass singer-songwriter.
No kidding!
He's got a hell of a band. They just had their second CD. He's played at Deep Cuts, at Pacine.
Have you really?
At Notch.
Wow, nice.
They're so good. And the music
That's
that we play
yeah.
in the background.
We're looking to, maybe we'll bring your band here. Yeah. We're looking to do a musical,
All right,
so there you go.
Yeah.
They're really, right now they're one of the house bands for Notch.
No kidding.
So,
wow. That's nice.
Yeah, so it's all original. I mean,
pretty well-rounded there, Russ,
Yeah, those are my passions anyway.
Yeah, good. Yeah. That's nice. Nice. It's nice you can do that, too. So we got a pretty good idea how it started, why it started, but, you know, I guess there's so many communities around. Why Medford? What is this? A certain reason is something you heard, or because I think everyone would be interested.
Yeah, it was luck.
Luck.
You know, we were in a warehouse in Chelsea on the second floor that was condemned. The foundation of this 345,000 square foot warehouse was being flooded with salt water. And slowly but surely, they kicked everybody out, and we were on the second floor. And we managed to stay. They actually offered the place as a training site for police. And they would blow down doors. They had flashbangs.
No
I mean, you it felt like a war with guns going off. And we put a big sign on the door saying, "We're here. Don't blow our door down. Don't."
You're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Well, we stayed as long as we possibly could.
Yeah.
Right.
And when we finally were looking for a place, we just lucked out. And we saw a sign on our door, on our window there. Talked to the realtor. Talked to the landlord. Who, you know, talked to the optician next door and the guy that runs the Japanese restaurant that is so good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One of my closest friends is a Japanese artist, and he said, "Oh, you're there? That's the best restaurant for money in the city." And he's a Japanese cook as well as.
Right. Yep. I know a lot of people go to that restaurant.
We started moving in, and we couldn't get anything done. We couldn't get an electrician. We found a local guy who was scary. Tattoos everywhere, dreads and stuff, and he turned out to be a master carpenter.
Yeah, that's the way it happens sometimes.
It's amazing. Yeah, and so I had Ross redoing, taking up a floor of, and our building at one point was a bank.
Okay.
And the bank that, Wells Fargo, that took everybody's mortgages away and made a lot of poor people.
Yeah, I remember them.
And in the back they had a fancy women's room and stuff, and we turned that into the dark room.
Nice.
And he spent 2 weeks removing the old floor.
It was a lot more difficult
than
I thought.
So it was a lot of work. You guys put a major effort into this.
Yeah. And we had, everybody was curious and supportive. You know, the town was really helpful. Our landlord was surprisingly helpful, too. He ran out of money, and so the building is only half occupied, and that's a pity.
Yeah.
There's leaky roof, ceiling, and stuff. But
right.
But anyway, it turned out to be, you know, Ross had great ideas, and I had, you know, been making mistakes for 50 years and learned from all of them. So between the two of us, we made a working place.
Yeah. It's good. Different generations working together. I love it.
Yeah.
Really. It's great when you can do that.
Every once in a while, I talk about it as if it were Mass Art. You know, that there's learning going on here.
Right. Yeah.
And, it's been a great move and a wonderful shift for us to shift to a public. Right now, there's a show at MIT, the new MIT Museum.
Right.
And I worked for many years with a guy named Doc Edgerton. He invented the high-speed photography, the milk drop and the bullet through the apple.
Yep.
And I was his teaching assistant, and then I became his partner. And when Doc died, he left a $100 million foundation to MIT. But he was collected by the Museum of Modern Art before Picasso.
Wow. And
so unlike most labs where you sort of have to have terrible situation and not good ventilation and you work people too hard, we always had the support of preparing exhibits. So we did an exhibit for the MIT Museum.
Nice.
That by the most important international publication last week said that this show produced by Palm Press was one of the 9 most important shows to see in the country.
So you guys are really, really doing some great stuff.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. We're proud of it.
And that's great. And you should be proud of it. Yeah.
And we're happy to work with, you know, with museums like that. And then we're also happy to work with individual artists and then also just individuals who, you know, need things printed and stuff like that.
Somebody came in with a framing job, Ross had on Ross's day off. And it turns out it was the guy that influenced him to become a musician when he was in high school.
That's right, yeah. It's interesting.
So, small world.
Yeah, you work with a hero, you know. Yeah.
All right, apparently, Gus, mm-hmm. I'm going to direct this question to you. You're well connected to the arts.
Yeah.
And I'm told that, you know, by people, given your prior role, I guess you sat on the board of directors for the
De Cordova,
Cordova
for
22 Museum.
Years. Though.
Can you? Yeah, I mean that was something. I mean,
well, you know, most of the we lived in Concord, where we were fortunate to raise our 2 boys, and we bought probably the last $43,000 house in Concord.
And wow, that was a while ago.
75. Yeah. And I had this friend. I mean, we love museums. We're deeply involved with it. We've donated work all over. We've published 65 portfolios.
Wow.
One of the shows that we did that came out of that was at the Museum of Fine Arts, a rock and roll show of the Grateful Dead and the Jefferson Airplane from portfolios we did. But the director of the De Cordova, who became a dear friend, he and his wife, me and my wife, said, I'd like you on the board. I said, you know, board members give $50,000 or more a year. I can't do that.
Right.
I'm an assistant professor in an art school. And he laughed and he said, you don't have to. He said, your presence will up. And then I realized that I'd published a lot of very important portfolios and many of them had become valuable. And so I would donate one of my artist's proofs.
Okay.
So Arlette and I ended up the largest donors to that museum.
Wow.
900 pieces of work, which at the time was 1/3 of their collection.
Wow, that's something. Yeah.
And so it was a treat. And my wife helped start the museum store. And so it's rare that she and I got to do things together. That evolved for her into a gallery in the south end of Boston that for 22 years was Boston's best gallery.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, so it's
amazing. Yeah, that's a great story.
Well,
yeah.
You know, it helps to go to a place like MIT. You know, I was going to be a physicist. And when that happens, you're taken seriously. And yep. I never thought about that, you know.
Well, yeah.
But
yeah,
it ended up being very, very true.
Yeah.
Doc and I were on the David Letterman show once. And I didn't even watch him. But I'll tell you, that's become the most popular video that the student fraternities and stuff would have,
would
show.
Yeah.
And
That's something to get on that show.
Yeah, it was cool.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And they had my favorite pianist, McCoy Tyner.
Oh, okay.
He was so good.
Yeah.
But, Doc was a big sort of lift into it because I ended up representing the estate. So we would sell photographs that I would produce that Doc and I would share the proceeds. But it allowed us to make sure that when we built our place out, it was the very best of it. We have great equipment.
Right. I can imagine.
It's really good equipment.
Nice. Yeah.
And we did the New York Times photo archives. We did National Geographic Centennial Exhibit. So we ended up working for major clients.
You certainly have. National Geographic. Huh?
Yeah, that was fun. That was so fun.
Oh, I can only imagine. National Geographic.
Yeah.
That's a feather in the cap,
yep.
as they say.
Yep. Yep.
Certainly is. All right. So we know, you know, you guys do much, much more than just photography, okay? You have a dark room, okay, for photo development, and you also offer framing services.
And we also have a digital lab.
And you have a digital lab.
The modern technology that's not wet and not chemistry, and it's for color, it's probably better than any process that's typically available now.
Okay, so is this new?
Well,
the process, or is it an old process? I'm trying to...
20, 30 years, okay. But it's gotten a whole lot better in the last 10 years.
It has, so there's a
lot
of
improvements. And Ross is an expert at the color corrections and stuff that you make.
Yep.
So people will come and say, you know, I got this problem. And when they're done, we almost always have people say, I never thought it could be that good.
Yep, yeah.
You know, the banned words at Palm Press are, that's good enough. So sometimes we find ourselves with really small projects spending more money than we're making.
Right.
But
right.
It's a beautiful thing that we do. And there are big projects that make up for all of that.
Right. The framing, I mean, I'm just curious now. Anything?
I mean, if I
can walk in, you spoke earlier, I can walk in with a sports jersey that's autographed, I want to frame, you guys will do it.
About anything.
Artwork, anything.
Yep. One thing I love about framing is, there are endless solutions to anything. I mean, there's always going to be an inexpensive solution, and for a lot of people, that's what you're looking for. And then it just can go anywhere from there, you know, complex solutions with various mounting and, like, jerseys where maybe you're going to be pinning it to something. But framing is just an endless creative solution.
It is, yeah.
So okay. Ross, when he worked at the frame shop while he was going to college, he had two jobs. He was also a barista.
You've been around.
Yeah.
Gotta make money somehow.
We all did.
He upped our coffee level completely.
Good.
And we'll actually do a shout out to Localito.
Okay.
Which is a coffee shop that opened a few months ago, a block and a half away from us.
I've heard of them.
Boy,
we haven't had them on the show, but that's up another show up the road.
They do Tinoak and Tacubana.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same brothers. They do it all.
Oh, is it real?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I had no idea.
But
same people. I go to the restaurant.
You know, and the making coffee isn't a whole lot different than making the chemicals that we use in in the dark room.
Okay.
Fortunately, you know, the chemical, not doing color photography, doing that with inkjet printers, we don't generate bad chemistry.
Okay.
I had a huge color lab in Pepperell. And we had to have reprocessors for everything that went into the water system to make sure that we weren't contaminating
at all. That's right, back in the day,
yeah.
A lot of that went on. So we talked about all the other things you provide. Do you also do classes? Is there?
So there are sort of two sides to that. We do artist talks with artists that we like, mostly that have produced, published photography books.
Okay.
And we'll do a Q&A with a book signing, and we'll have them talk about, you know, their process. And a lot of the guests are other photographers who are, you know, interested in publishing their own book or interested in, you know, how it was made.
Right.
And those are really wonderful. We frequently do them on Thursday nights, about once a month. And then the other side of it is we've started doing one-on-one lessons in the darkroom. I work directly with somebody who, you know, maybe has printed a little bit in the darkroom or maybe never has, but they're interested in it. And I sort of work with them to make a really beautiful print of one of their photographs.
Wow.
And I show them, you know, how to make certain decisions about how to make it look the way you want, whether it's altering the contrast or adding or subtracting time to your exposure, and then, you know, how to process it properly so that it's going to be archival. And that's been very satisfying for me, and I think for the people who have done it.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. So you actually do one-on-one. So
someone
could call, set it up with you,
yes,
and boom.
Yep.
No, and it's
they
really
get to
interesting.
Actually work in the darkroom.
And we gain friends of the darkroom and friends of the community, and we've actually had a marriage come about because of that.
Well, there you go. Wow.
But I remember I started when I was 9 years old, and it was my dad's hobby, and once a week we turned the bathroom into a darkroom.
Okay.
The Jean d'Arc, he called it.
That had to be quite a darkroom.
Yeah. It was, you know, plywood on the toilet, and but it worked, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, fortunately, the houses we had were always 1.5 bathrooms, so no emergencies.
Right. Yep.
Messed up what we were doing.
I would hope not. Yeah.
But it was like magic, you know. You put this piece of paper after you expose it to what was like a slide projector, and all of a sudden it came up, and it's still like that.
It's
still really exciting.
Yeah.
And so to introduce people to it, particularly when they've gone from digital, where it's just, you know, a bigger version of your printer, to actually seeing, and Ross sort of, you know, the changes that you can make with your hands and with
yeah.
are so subtle, and it's kind of like, you know, tuning a guitar. Mm. At one point, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Before it, it's cacophonous. And
then to add to that, we do offer daily rentals for our darkroom as well. We're not in the darkroom every day, like Gus mentioned earlier. So people who might do a one-on-one session with me, if they, you know, start to get the hang of it and they want to do more of it themselves, they can rent the darkroom for a day.
So obviously they have to know what they're doing before they rent the darkroom.
And they get vetted by Ross.
Yes. I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah, if somebody says, well, I know what to do. And, you know,
yeah.
One of the enlargers we have, when I bought it new many years ago, it was $25,000. And
wow.
They don't make it anymore.
Right, so there you go.
So, yeah. So you don't want somebody messing that up.
No, that's what I figured, absolutely not. So, I, you know, given the advancements in technology, you know, how tough is it? You know, you offer photography in the age of digital photos. I mean, well, I don't even know how to ask the question.
Well, it's pretty easy to make a print that looks a lot like what you want it to.
Okay.
Digitally.
Yeah.
It may not have the richness of a fine art print made on gelatin silver paper, but you may not even give a damn about that. You may just want
right.
to see your great aunt, you know, looking good.
Right.
But at some point you become, you know, I have a friend that always hated baseball. And when high-def TV came, he could all of a sudden see the spin on the ball from the pitcher. And it changed it for him completely.
Yes, yeah.
And so when you tune people into the subtleties of what's possible, all of a sudden they become... It's like listening to your favorite song on an AM radio
right.
and then on a good stereo system.
Big difference.
Some people don't care. Some people go, whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. We want the people to go, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, we've helped set up darkrooms. Or, you
nice.
Know, people are always reaching out to me. My dad had a dark room. It's in the basement. We don't know what to do with it. And we have a list of schools that we haven't donated
right.
to.
Right, yeah.
They're usually not worth the kind of money they cost way back when.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But it's better to, you know, pass them on than throw them in the junkyard.
Is there a lot of things involved with these old dark rooms? I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. A lot of equipment, a lot of maintenance.
Yeah,
we have a graveyard of spare parts for when things go wrong with ours.
Oh, that's what I was going to guess. Yeah. So there is.
And well, camera repairmen, you know, it used to cost $50 to get your camera tuned up. Now it's $350.
Right. Yeah.
And that's more than some cameras cost. You should come by sometime, and we'll put you in the dark room with this.
Well, I'm going to come by.
It's absolute magic. It's so cool. You know,
I actually found some ancient stuff from 30 years ago, and I gave
it
to...
We're going
to
process it.
Yeah, I gave it to... I don't know what's on it. Yeah. I have no idea. I hope it doesn't get me in any trouble. you never know, but
years ago,
process it.
Before I went off to college, I worked at a camera store in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And we had this elderly woman come in. And she had a roll of film that she discovered from 616 film, from a camera that hadn't been made for 50 years.
Wow.
And she said, I don't know if it's any good. And I said, well, it's $1 to process the film. And she clearly was well-dressed and wealthy, and she lived in a house, you know,
right.
in downtown Washington, D.C. I don't want to waste the money. And I said, well, you know, I'll throw it in when I develop my own film. I don't want to accept charity. So she came in once a day for 2 weeks, asking. And finally I said, well, where did you store it? And she said, in the attic. I said, is the attic air conditioned? She said, no. So attic in Washington, D.C. in the summer is 140 degrees, and it's cooked. So finally I said, you know, I can make sure. And she said, how would you do that? I said, let me look at the film. And I opened up the film.
Yeah.
And I said, nothing on it. It's no good. She thanked me so much.
There you go.
She could sleep better, and we threw the film away for her.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's the process is weird. It's
magic.
I'm
sure. Yeah. I mean, I have similar. What I gave him is, you know, a roll of film. It's been in the... I'm pretty sure it's used. It's been in the container for 30 years now, and it's fortunately it was never in an attic or, you know. And
well, when we printed for National, that centennial exhibit for National Geographic, and the next time you come by, I'll show you the book we did.
Yeah, with I'm definitely gonna once he gives me a call, tells me I'm all set, I'll be in.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, they had film that was, you know, negatives that were 100 years old that were anonymous that we made prints from.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is that there was a period of time in the 30s when they made film using acetate and nitrate.
Right.
And it's why there's no Hollywood films from the silent era, because they self-immolated. They would explode.
Right. I remember that, the acetate.
So Geographic, actually, the New York Times in 1946 threw away 1.5 million negatives of prints that they had published in the previous 50 years of the Times.
Yeah.
And if the photographer editor knew you, you know, hey, Joe Blow, we got, you know, 20 contact sheets of your film. Do you want it, or should we toss it? Most of them said toss it. You know. And so when we ended up working for the National Geographic, we ended up making copy negatives, really high quality, very expensive, so we could reproduce those images.
You know, it's funny. I think they called it Kodachrome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was the best color film.
Still in the box, never been used. I have a few of them.
Can't develop.
My father was big into, you know, taking pictures, photography, whatever. And I ended up with a bunch of, I don't even know where it came from, but it's all unused. And original boxes never opened.
That's wonderful. But you can't process Kodachrome anymore.
No more.
It was a chemical process.
I figured.
That had, it read the chemistry and it changed it each time. And there was two labs in the world that did it.
Right.
And Kodak shut them both down.
Okay.
So
yeah, my wife's going to be afraid now, because she's going to hear what you said and she's going to think there's something on there. It's going to explode in my door or something.
No, that has to be a film that was made in the early 30s.
Okay, well, that's good. I hope this isn't the early 30s.
And you can tell when it goes bad because it smells like vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know this. I don't think it's, I don't know. It's hard. I got to, maybe when I come pick up the other stuff,
I'll show you
this. Mm-hmm. You can take a look at it. There's quite a bit of it.
There are people that collect old film rolls. But in the boxes, they don't want them opened up. They just
These are all sealed. Yeah.
That's great.
When I come by. All right. So now we got to get back to the show. I could talk to you guys for
We can talk.
Yeah.
Too.
All right. So you spoke about, you know, you're also a bookstore. Can you tell us a little bit more types of books you sell?
Ross would know that best because he edits and prices.
Okay. And you sell used books too, correct?
Mostly.
And is there a certain criteria, or what do you use, or how do you go about getting these books?
Well, many of them are used books that have come from Gus's collection.
Okay.
He's been an avid collector for probably 50 years, and hilariously bought 2, 3, 4, 5 copies of everything. So we've been carting around books in boxes for years. And
we've given many non-photo books to the library.
That's nice.
What a great library you have in this town.
Oh, man. Can't say enough good about it. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
they did a tremendous job with that library. It's I don't even call it a library. It's a community center.
Yeah.
They have everything. Yeah.
Well, eventually, after I recognized how many duplicate books there were, I convinced Gus that we could probably get rid of some, save some space, make a few bucks. And in doing so, he and I have both collected books from newer photo book publishers.
Okay.
And they've become increasingly expensive. You know, maybe 10 years ago, you could get a good book for $40, $45. And now, you know, a good book is $65, $70, even $75.
Yep.
And, you know, we'd collect them, and occasionally we would get one that was really, really beautiful. But a lot of the time you'd get it, and, you know, you might be a little underwhelmed by it and wish you didn't spend the $70 on it. And when I was in school, I was obsessed with it. I was going to the Mass Art Library all the time and looking at all the books. It was, you know, it was the way to see large bodies of photographs. When I got out of school, I had to buy them all, and can't really afford that.
No, I can imagine.
And I wished that there was somewhere that I could go to just look at them and decide, you know, oh, this one's worth the $70. I want to keep that. So we wanted to offer a place where people could come and look at them and decide, you know, if it's worth what it costs. And or just come and look at them. You know, if somebody comes and doesn't buy one, we're happy to have them to just look at.
It was a shared
experience from us, too, because occasionally we get a book and we say, it's not as good as... And our opinions, our sensibilities from music to photographers resonates. It's really... We don't have a lot of arguments about what I think is great and he thinks is crap.
Yeah.
But what would happen is if you'd get indications of 10 new books, and you could afford 2.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you say, well, next month I'll do it. And they would sell out, and they'd be $250.
Right.
So we now carry 5 or 6 book publishers. We select the best from it. So we have a wall of all new books. And those are the ones where we have book signings usually. And those are exciting. We did them on Saturdays, and nobody came. Because if it was a nice Saturday, who wanted to go to town? We did them on Thursday nights, and we had some that were standing room only.
Yes. See, what a difference, just picking the right day.
Yeah. And we also learned not to do it in July and August.
No.
We learned the hard way.
Yeah, July and August, not much goes on. A lot of people are vacation time, put it that way. Mm-hmm. A lot of us learned that the hard way, July and August. All right, so you brought up about the books and everything else. Are you planning, let's get into what you got planned. You got anything planned? You inviting someone to these book events?
Well, we had
our
last one.
Anyone you're excited to bring to Medford?
We had our last one was 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We won't do another one till the fall, but in the fall we'll probably have 3 or 4 in September and October.
Okay.
And they'll all be people who've done new books. We had a wonderful book signing. Our last Saturday one that was somewhat of a success. A woman who went to Massart, I think, 30 years ago. She's done 5 books about the Basque country, the Spanish part of Spain.
Right.
She's a great photographer. And back in the 70s, I was a fan of punk rock. And I liked Willie Loco Alexander. And I liked Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground.
Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground. Wow, what memories.
She lives in Gloucester for the last 40 years. She comes to the opening with a bunch of her very rare books, which we sold a bunch for her. And her husband of 40 years is Willie Loco Alexander.
No kidding.
Who replaced Lou Reed at the Velvet Underground. And he's, with his hair still spiked up. He's 6'8".
Right. Yeah.
And he's funny as hell. And he was a painter. And everyone that didn't know them was so surprised that Willie Loco, he's a foot taller than she is. And he paints wonderfully.
Right.
But it's like, whoever would have thought that I would get to meet Willie Loco Alexander.
Right.
And that his wife would be an artist who I, respect incredibly.
It's a great thing.
That's Ann Rearick, by the
Ann
way.
Ann Rearick, yeah.
Yep. She's incredibly talented, incredibly kind. You meet her and you feel like you've known her for 20 years.
And she teaches kids. She doesn't teach at the college. She teaches at the high school level.
Right.
And, it's rare that you have someone of that caliber who shows and photographs her in major collections.
That's teaching at that level. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah, so that was a great benefit one.
Yeah, I'm sure. I like that story. That's a that's a classic. That's a classic.
Well, Ross and I talk about sometimes people that we think are, well, we'll work with them. They're so exciting.
Right.
And sometimes there are people that we work with that afterwards you say, God, I hope we don't have to do that again.
We all go through it. Yeah. This is going to be the last question. I'm only asking this out of my own curiosity. I got to ask you, all right? I know your worlds collided, whatever, but how did you guys meet?
Let me take this one.
Yeah.
When I was in school,
our
Let's Gallery, Gallery KFS, was, as Gus mentioned, the best photography gallery in Boston.
Yeah.
I went to openings there to see contemporary work, and a friend of mine, when I was at school, became our Let's assistant.
Oh, that's right.
And, I was envious because I wanted to be connected with that gallery. And he eventually reached out to me because he said, hey, Arlette's husband needs some help with some framing jobs. And I had been working at a frame shop. I didn't know who Gus was at the time.
Right.
And I said, sure, if it's at the gallery, I'm happy to get involved. I got there and immediately we left the gallery and went to the place in Chelsea, which I was like, where the hell is this guy taking me? When I get there, I recognize there's a massive darkroom in here. And I didn't have access to a darkroom at the time. I had finished school and I was looking for access to a darkroom. So I helped him with the frame. Couple of frame jobs. I was working for him maybe once a week, mm-hmm. and started trading access to the darkroom, and and then started working on some printing jobs for Gus, and it eventually became clear that we had a similar sensibility as to what looks great and how to do it and how to produce it efficiently. Now Gus is a well-known photographer. He has work in many, many museums.
And yes.
It wasn't until after I started working for him that I really start to understand who he was. And occasionally we've started to work on some of Gus's work.
Yeah, that was always fun.
Gus has a lifetime of photographs that have either not been printed or haven't been looked at in years. And, you know, part of the future of Palm Press, as I hope to take it over, is we'll be, you know, printing
some... I'll be a client instead of...
there you go.
...printing some of Gus's work. So yeah. That's how it came to be. And, yeah, we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
One of the things I discovered that when you bring someone on board... usually there's a lot that they have to unlearn. Bad habits.
Yes.
Ross, there was very, very little that Ross had to unlearn. And he was such an eager student. You know, is there a way we can do this? And I would remember some obscure chemist prep. And he would incorporate it into what he did. And he's come up with technical solutions for some of our clients' work, which you would think would be impossible. And they're brilliant, like the large digital negatives you made for the Iowa person.
So one of the things that we've done is figured out a way to take a digital image, even sometimes iPhone images, and produce a negative by printing it on our inkjet printer, and then we use that negative to print it as a silver print in the darkroom. And they're beautiful. They're more beautiful than we thought they possibly could be.
Really nice. That's a great story. And I'm so, you know, we got to end the show now.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to end it. I don't. But, you know, time constraints, you know. But I want to, I really thank you both. You know, it's that time again. We have to end it. I want to thank Ross and Gus for joining us on Method Happenings. And I wish, we really do, wish continued success at Palm Press Studio. I also want to take a minute to thank everyone who has been watching the show. Thank you for your feedback. And if you would like to appear on the show, you can contact us at Medford Happenings 02155@gmail.com, and you will be able to watch replays of this show, which I think is a great one, on Medford Community Media Access Channel Monday, Wednesday, Friday nights, 6 p.m., 7 p.m. Also, check out our website. You'll see the show there, methodhappenings.com. And now you can either view or listen to the podcast of this program. And you can find all of our shows on Method Happenings YouTube. Just go to the YouTube.com, search for Method Happenings. Please like and subscribe to the channel in our videos. And this is getting longer and longer. You can also find us on Facebook at Method Happenings. And we also have a section on Reddit, which you can find us on reddit.com/r/methodhappenings. Wow, that's a lot. And we just keep growing. For the Method Happenings team, Paul Marco, Bruce James, I'm John Petrella. Thank you guys for coming. It's been a great show. I'm John Petrella. And remember, stay informed, Medford. See you next time. Ta-da!